Dave Zirin returns on Edge of Sports Radio, where sports and politics collide.
Somewhere in this impossible community. That's been three, and that's only.
Oh, are we on the air? Because I'm Mr. De La Soul. All right, boom. We're back
lost
here.
I lost it.
I did. Yeah. We're back here on Edge of Sports Radio. So happy to have our next guest on the show. He's been on before. The man knows college basketball backwards and forwards, especially the world of UConn. He also knows tennis, as his new book reflects, which is called Roger Federer Back on Top. His name is Richard Kent. Richard, how you doing, sir?
Good, Dave. How are you? Happy holiday.
Oh, great to have you on. So first and foremost, I mean, Richard, you're a tennis guy. You know the sport. You could have taken on any number of athletes. Why Roger Federer? Why write this book now?
I think Federer is one of the greatest, if not the greatest athlete I've ever seen in person. And I was really taken by his press conference after he was up two match points against Djokovic in the U.S. Open semifinals in 2011. Djokovic hit that miracle return, and then Federer double-faulted uncharacteristically. Mm-hmm. Federer loses in 7-5, actually, in the fifth set. And I think he went home and he did some reflecting. He had lost a two-set-to-love lead against Sanga at Wimbledon that year, losing in the fourth round for the first time in 7 years. And he really did a lot of reflecting. He came out hot as a pistol. He wins seven tournaments. He wins Wimbledon. By winning Wimbledon, he takes over the number one spot. He had fallen to number four at one point behind Andy Murray. He's now two, by the way, behind Djokovic. But he did take the number one spot long enough to pass Sampras's record and bring it up to 302 weeks.
Going back in tennis history, and I know tennis is one of the sports that's particularly difficult to compare eras, but where do you rank him among the all-time greats?
I rank him as number one, and I've had conversations with the likes of Pete Sampras and Patrick Rafter as recently as 3 weeks ago. One thing...
What do they say? Do they agree with that?
You really don't get a direct answer from Sampras. Sampras and Laver are the only other two guys in the conversation. But the comment that you get is that Federer may end his career with a losing record against Murray, Nadal, and Djokovic combined. Now, of course, he's 2-14 against Nadal on clay, and Nadal is the greatest clay player of all time. So that's one reason for that. But the only other era in tennis you can compare Federer's era with is the Borg, Connors, McEnroe, and Lendl era. And if you choose the greatest player of that era, which will either be McEnroe or Borg, they didn't end up with losing records against the other three.
The other point that I would ask is, it sounds like when you're saying the conversation is with really Laver and Sampras when you're comparing it to Federer, you're talking about the totality of their careers, the tournaments won, the Grand Slams won. But what about a player at their best on their best day? Because that makes me think of people like a John McEnroe, for example, and think about how would Federer do against players playing their best at their top moment. Where do you have Federer in that kind of discussion?
You got to work from the premise, Dave, that anybody can lose to anybody at that level on a given day. But if I had to go 4 out of 7 on their best days, I would take Federer over all of them. I mean, one might argue that Sampras had the better serve, but I think that Federer's serve is the most underrated stroke in tennis. He can either hit it directly into your body or he hits a serve way out wide right that is very difficult to return. His precision, I think, is more important than serving 138 miles per hour.
If there's been one critique of Federer, and I haven't read Back on Top yet, I'm very excited to do so, So I asked this question about trying to get inside the book a little bit. If there's a critique of Federer that's a critique that most people do make, it's less about his game and more about, in this 21st century media era, about his personality and about, like, is this guy too robotic? Is he too much like the Swiss watch that's always on time? Does he not bring enough personality to the table? What is there in Federer's background that you learned writing the book that maybe gives some more dimensions to the athlete?
I think the Federer that you see in the Rolex commercials and in the Mercedes commercials is a Roger Federer that IMG and Tony Gottschalk, his agent, and of course Mary Jo Fernandez, his husband, contrived. The Roger Federer that you saw between the ages of 14 and 17, was very much a rebel. Was very much an Andre Agassi type player during that year. He dyes his hair blonde at one point in time. He is disputing line calls on a McEnroe scale or a McEnroe level. And it really wasn't until he got handlers. He was that time really more guided perhaps by his mother than anybody else. But when he got handlers, including his wife, Mirka, that he changed, and they, you know, they turned him into Mr. Urbane. I don't necessarily agree that he's bland and boring if you go to one of his press conferences. I mean, the guy mm-hmm. is very bright. He's very erudite. He speaks five languages. I think he understands tennis in an historical context. And I just think you'll see a different dimension to him than you might on the tennis court.
Mm-hmm. Coach, you have a question.
Yeah, I agree with you, Richard. I think Federer's a brilliant guy, both on and off the court. I got to ask a question. It seemed like Tiger and they were trying to put them two together, and Tiger dominated his sport and Federer in tennis, and that they were majors versus who had the most majors and so forth. Then Tiger hit the fire hydrant, and boom, that's gone. Mm-hmm. Am I right? What happened there?
Well, first of all, from a personal perspective, Federer and his wife, Mirka, ended up siding with Tiger's wife, Elin. So the relationship that they tried to put together no longer exists. I mean, you had Tiger at a U.S. Open final, Roddick against Federer, cheering for Federer when Roddick is obviously an American and Tiger is obviously an American. But I think the personal relationship kind of broke down as a result of that. Federer is pretty much of a straight-laced type of guy, and I think that's what IMG wanted him to be. And I think the comparisons kind of broke down, too, because I've been saying for a while, I just do not see Tiger winning another major. I mean, his Saturdays and Sundays this past year, especially in majors, were so abysmal that I just got to wonder what the guy has inside him right now. I mean, you can't play well just on Thursdays and Fridays. So I think the comparisons are going to, and by the way, this is way off topic, but I have never been a Tiger is the greatest in his sport. I'm still a Jack Nicklaus guy because Jack Nicklaus had to beat Palmer, Player, Billy Casper, Gene Littler, Lee Trevino day in and day out. I mean, who was Tiger playing against, for God's sakes? I mean, Phil is a good player. He's a Hall of Fame player, but is he a great player? I don't know. I really don't know if he is. So I'm you know, getting off topic a little. I will always be a Nicklaus is the greatest golfer of all time person.
Yeah, you're definitely in the minority there, I think, among the golf cognoscenti. But one of the arguments for Nicklaus is, well, 18 first place finishes, 19 second place finishes. Mm-hmm. That's a tough one,
but Dave,
to get around.
Why the 19th?
No, that's my point. That's a great argument for Nicklaus. Is like, wow,
he's
19 second place
Palmer.
Finishes.
I mean,
it's amazing.
He's playing against Player. I mean, of course, there's going to be second place finishes.
Mm-hmm. No, exactly.
Watson.
But get it back to Federer. Watson. What's one thing that you learned about Roger Federer that actually surprised you before you started really delving into and writing the book?
I had an opportunity to sit with him for a good amount of time at a New York hotel in March before he played Sampras. And he told me about this look that he has before he sends the ball up in the air with his hand, and he takes a quick look at his opponent and where his opponent is leaning, and he makes a decision about his serve at that moment.
Yeah.
He actually told me that he was in a rain delay with Nadal at Wimbledon for 2 hours and 40 minutes, and he had his serve all planned. I mean, that's all he could think about for 2 hours and 40 minutes is, where is my serve going? And he comes out onto the court, he tosses the ball up, he sees Nadal leaning a little bit to his right, and he serves it directly into his body, and Nadal is defenseless.
Richard. In a split second, he can make that adjustment?
That's what he told me.
Wow.
And
quick
I
twitch
don't
muscles.
I know that I'm gonna doubt his comments.
No.
Tennis.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So
yep.
Mean Mark, you had a question.
Yeah, yeah. Really interesting. I've got a cursory knowledge of Roger Federer and everything, and I'm really interested in reading the book about all this kind of stuff. I was wondering, based on the preparation, based on, I guess, the thought that he puts into his sport, is there an athlete that like most that would most match up that would be like a corollary to Roger Federer in like a different sport?
Derek Jeter, I would say. The way he's packaged, probably the smoothness of Derek Jeter, the fact that you don't see, I've seen both of them after playing, and you don't see a bead of sweat on either one of them. He would be my best reference group for Federer.
And remaining competitive when they're supposed to be past their prime, too,
absolutely,
because of their competitive spirit.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's another point. I mean, Jeter is, you know, Jeter's a bit older. I mean, Federer is 31 in a sport in which Jimmy Connors made it to a U.S. Open semis at, you know, having turned 40 3 days before.
But where McEnroe saw his best days pass at 27 and Borg retired at 26, although he did come back for a second.
Borg retired for a different reason. Yeah, Borg retired because he knew he couldn't be number one again, and I've had conversations with Borg about this. Borg was unwilling to be number two.
No, you're absolutely right about that, but I did want to say that you have to look at Roger Federer and just understand that on that tennis court, he is a knight in shining armor. And speaking of knights, the Rutgers Scarlet Knights. The Rutgers Scarlet Knights just announced that they were going to be going to the Big 12. And I'm Scarlet right now.
Big 10.
Because the Big 10. Because Big 14. And I'm Scarlet right now and just considering the fact that Maryland is also going to be in the Big 12. What is your take on the Rutgers move in this conference realignment?
Well, here's a good line. Rutgers was looking for a lifeboat, and they got a 2-week Carnival cruise instead.
you bet.
Which I think is true. Except, I'll tell you something, and I've got a little insight on this also. This has been going on for about a year. Rutgers almost got in instead of Nebraska. Rutgers is a member of the AAU, which is the Association of American Universities. There's 61 research universities, and Nebraska was not. Syracuse was at one point, and they just lost it. You know, people say, well, why not UConn? I mean, UConn has such a rich sports heritage compared to Rutgers. But two reasons. Number one, actually three reasons. Number one, UConn is not in the AAU as Rutgers is. Number two, the UConn football program is abysmal right now. And number three, Rutgers can maybe bring to the Big 10 or 14 or whatever it is, about a million cable homes to the Big Ten network, which is something that UConn cannot deliver because Rutgers is, according to a bunch of different studies, the most popular college football team in New York City.
Yeah.
And this includes Notre Dame and Syracuse as well.
No, that's true. Yay, Richard Kent, the book is called On Top, about Roger Federer, Back on Top. And
it's actually called Roger Federer, Back on Top. It's available on Amazon.com. The U.S. Tennis Hall of Fame has copies, and I'm doing a bunch of book signings before Christmas.
Well, Mazel Tov, sir. Well done, and happy holidays to you.
Well, if you're going to say Mazel Tov, Dave, then I got to say I'm doing them before Hanukkah because I offer them Jewishship. I will take away the Christmas, and I will put in the Hanukkah.
Nice. Mazel Tov it is. Happy Hanukkah. And we got to go to break right now. Richard, we'll put it out on Twitter, put out the word. Congratulations on the book, and thanks for joining us on Edge of Sports.
Okay, great. Take care, guys.
All right,
bye-bye.
Man. Thank you.
All right, we got to go to break. We'll be back to wrap up the show with what we're thankful for in the world of sports.
Dave Zirin will be right back with more Edge of Sports Radio.